We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
50 million people in the bullseye of a potentially monstrous snowstorm.
Blizzard watch is now in effect for the D.C. Metro, the Baltimore Metro, Frederick, Maryland. Winter Storm Jonas is likely to be a historic storm.
Monstrous, historic, that's how CNN and the Weather Channel are describing so-called Winter Storm Jonas as it closes in on Washington, D.C. and the East Coast today. Welcome back, everybody. I'm NPR News Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner. Carrie Miller is off today. Today on ClimateCast, winter kicks into high gear out east. While here in Minnesota, we've just endured the coldest air of the season so far. But overall, we're getting off fairly easy in this El Nino-flavored winter. How do we know? It's called the Winter Misery Index. And what the heck is that, you ask? Well, what overall trends are we seeing in Minnesota right now in the season formerly known as winter? How is winter changing in Minnesota? Two guys who probably know more about winter trends than anyone else in Minnesota are here today. Pete Boulay is with the State Climatology Office with the Minnesota DNR. And Dr. Mark Seeley, he's a familiar voice to you. He's a professor with the Department of Soil, Water, and Climate at the University of Minnesota. You also hear Mark, of course, on Morning Edition Fridays here on NPR News. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good to be with you, Paul.
Good to be with you. The three weather and climate geeks in the same room, what could possibly go wrong? Let's start with the big weather and really soon to be climate news of the day. It's that East Coast storm. Models, you guys have been very consistent here. A bullseye of 15 to 25, maybe even 30 inches of snow near Washington, D.C. If they get to 20 inches, it ties the number two spot overall for all-time snowfall. 28 inches is number one. Mark Seeley, it's very rare to get this kind of a prolific snowfall, isn't it?
Extremely unusual. And, you know, it's still the thing that strikes me. Now, Pete's looked at the forecast in more detail than I have. But what strikes me, Paul, is the Weather Service today called for a press conference.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because the I-95 corridor encompasses so much of the East Coast population that they really want to make sure they cover their bases. But, you know, Laramie, Wyoming's already had blizzards this year. I don't know that a press conference was called for them. But nevertheless, I think it's early. I think there's still a lot of unknowns associated with this storm.
Sure.
It does potentially hold that magnitude that you referred to, mm-hmm. which would put it in the top two or three historically. And that is rare, rare territory, especially for the nation's capital.
Well, and we know that they had 1 inch of snow around D.C. last night. It shut the city down. They're in gridlock. There were people stranded on the roads with an inch of snow last night, overnight for several hours. Pete Boulay, looking at this storm, what strikes you about this storm?
Well, you got to remember, D.C., their average snowfall for the whole season is 15 inches. So, you know, they get 1 inch of snow. It's a big deal to them. And like you said, their record's 28 inches, which is the same as our record here in the Twin Cities,
right.
28 inches. So, you know, it's too early to say if they're going to try to match that. Like Mark said, there is some uncertainty here. And a nor'easter, I always have snow envy for nor'easters
because
they have the big pool of ocean water to work with here. And when you look at a nor'easter, the margin of error is very, very small. 50-mile wide band of heavy snow is what you'll get in a nor'easter on the East Coast. And the models, it's still pretty far out. The storm's just taking shape in Texas right now, so a lot can happen.
And, of course, Mark, Pete mentions the warm waters of the Atlantic Ocean, even the Gulf of Mexico fueling the storm. Climate attribution, I'm sure people are going to look back if this thing pans out and say, hey, was there an El Nino component? Was there a climate change signal to this? And warmer than average ocean temperatures now, 70s, not too far off the coast. Is that something we can point to and say that's above seasonal norms?
Oh, absolutely, Paul. I think that that's a player in the whole backward look at the year 2015. And we all know that the Weather Service, NOAA, and the NASA scientists came out earlier this week with their assessment of 2015, warmest global year of record since 1880. And I think the ocean basins in general, especially those in the Northern Hemisphere, played a big, big role in that signature for 2015 because they were so much of the Northern Hemisphere oceans were warmer than normal and consistently warmer than normal throughout the year.
Pete Boulay, the Winter Misery Index. Now, I got to ask you about this. We've been getting off pretty easy on winter so far. Who the heck came up with the Winter Misery Index?
Well, we were thinking, how does winters of today compare to winters of long ago? And so a few years back, it wasn't even necessarily a bad winter. Started kind of trying to rank past winters together and seeing how do they compare to the modern winters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time, we haven't had a big winter in a while, and then 13-14 came along, and we kind of had a taste of what winter, you know, used to be like, how we remember as kids.
Yeah, back in the old days, yeah, the frozen tundra.
Absolutely, and so that's kind of where they came from, and since then, we've been kind of keeping track of the winters, and it's something I created. It's not necessarily something that's around the country. Mm-hmm. There is another index, Accumulated Winter Season Severity Index, for the rest of the country. And
sure,
this one's just for the Twin Cities. And you could, I've applied it to St. Cloud too. You can do the same thing. Just they get a little colder than we do. So, it's kind of, you got to vary it from place to place.
And I read, I reported on this last week, the last couple of weeks, that this was one of the mildest, sort of easiest winters so far on record before this recent cold snap. Have you had a chance to crunch any numbers since last weekend's cold?
Yep. Right now, our winter misery index for this winter is at 21 points, and 15 of the points is for cold and 6 for snow. Mm-hmm. If the winter ended today, we'd have about the second or third easiest winter on record. And of course, we really didn't have winter until after Christmas for the most part.
Yeah, and of course, 14 below at Twin Cities Airport last Sunday morning. I saw 34 below at Embarrass, I think maybe 36 below at Cook.
Yes.
Last weekend. Does
yes.
that make sense, Mark?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing record-setting. I think just a big slap in the face for all of us after such an extraordinarily mild December. So getting down to sub-zero levels was an abrupt adjustment, to say the least.
Bit of a reality check there. You're right. Now, let's talk about that mild December a little and what it did for ice in across Minnesota. We had late, even near record late ice in dates this winter. I know Lake Minnetonka finally iced over completely on New Year's Eve. That's within 2 days of the record. Mm-hmm. Mark, how does this season fit into the longer-term trends of ice cover in Minnesota?
Well, of course, it's a late start. I think Pete does a good job, especially on the state climate website, of keeping track of all the lake ice end dates. I'd say generally 3 weeks late, not necessarily record setting, mm-hmm. but certainly very much delayed already, I might add, with impacts on the winter tourism season, especially the ice fishing season. Already we've been reading about impacts of the delayed season. And so not record setting, but certainly the sustained, I think the signature of our year-end climate was persistent warmth, day after day after day after day. Not necessarily setting a lot of daily records, but just the persistence of the warmth was so extraordinary.
And we talk about those impacts, Pete. Mm-hmm. I know there was an ice climbing contest that was canceled. I'm a pond hockey player, and
okay.
This weekend the North American Pond Hockey Championships will still go on, the events, the benefits, without the hockey. There just isn't enough ice on Lake Minnetonka. I talked to some of the organizers last night. They're talking about 10 to maybe 13 inches. They need 18 to get all those people out on the ice. And the other pond hockey championship on Nokomis got pushed back a couple of weeks, the ice fishing contest mm-hmm. on Mille Lacs. So this has an economic impact on Minnesota. Why, other than that, is ice cover important to Minnesota lakes?
Well, it's just part of the natural, annual formation of the ice in the lakes. You know, it's definitely something that, it happens every year. When does it happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can vary quite a bit. And, certainly, phenology speaking, I don't know what the consequences would be to have a lake being completely open year round.
Sure.
Probably more evaporation for sure.
Mm-hmm.
This year, like Mark said, it was about 3 weeks late. We don't have a long ice in record, unfortunately, to really get a good handle on what's happened over a long period of time. We didn't have any really record setting dates this year, but it was close.
Are we seeing an erosion both on the front end in winter and the back end in spring of ice cover in Minnesota generally?
We have a better handle on the ice out because we have much longer records. So their trend has been somewhat earlier over time. There was a few winters that or springs that were late. And so that's kind of skewed it, tugged up the trend line a little bit.
Yes.
So, you know, it's not as clear as it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago because we had 2 years in a row of late ice out. Last year's ice out was fairly early. And it all depends on what the spring brings, how early that ice leaves the lakes.
You know, El Nino, we touched on it briefly. So far, 1997-98, it's tied that year as the strongest El Nino event on many benchmarks. We knew and, in fact, predicted this would skew us toward a milder-than-average winter here in Minnesota this year. Mark Seeley, how has this winter played out so far, both in Minnesota and around the rest of the world that you've observed according to the so-called El Nino playbook to this point?
Well, the my perception, Paul, is the some, but not all, of the historical correlated climate patterns have emerged this year as a result of this very strong El Nino. I think the reason that not all of them have emerged, certainly we've had a milder than normal winter as a whole so far in Minnesota, which is a strong signature.
Yes.
But we haven't seen all of the other so-called correlated patterns emerge. And I think part of that is tied to the changing climate patterns in general, because what we have here is a strong episode of El Nino, no question about it, but occurring coincidentally with one of the warmest episodes of the North Pacific Ocean in history, occurring in the same year with one of the lowest ice extents in the Arctic Ocean that we've ever had. So we've got to acknowledge that these other global climate features are important players as well, and the manner in which they interact is probably having some effect on whether or not the El Nino correlations are indeed playing out.
And if you take all of that and consider sort of the background hum of our planet warming globally,
right,
we get some really warm years, right? It's sort of a cumulative effect.
That's right. No question. With the background climate pattern of warming that is already occurring, both in the oceans and on the land surfaces, most notably the Northern Hemisphere, whenever an El Nino chapter comes into play, it even amplifies the signal, so we see a more profound signal than what the background signal is.
NOAA and NASA yesterday, of course, came out with what we knew the data would show, that 2015 absolutely blew away the record for the warmest year on record globally. Pete, why is the magnitude of the record with the data that came out yesterday important?
Well, looking at the entire globe, it was well above and beyond any previous record. So it blew out the old record away.
Which was only last year.
Yeah, only last year. So if you look at the trend over the entire globe, it really stood out. Now, Minnesota, we did have a few cooler than normal months, so we didn't join the rest of the globe in having the warmest year on record. You know, we had a February that was the 17th coldest in the state. So that tugged down what could have been the warmest year on record, too, in Minnesota.
But we did end up, what, about 2 degrees above average for the state last year?
About the seventh warmest year on record
seventh
for Minnesota.
Warmest.
So, you know, we weren't quite in the group with the rest of the globe, but you throw it all together, by far warmer than the previous record.
Mark, 2015, 15 of the 16 warmest years on record globally have all occurred since 2000. What does that tell us?
Well, that the trend is very emphatic. It tells us that aside from what the climate models are telling us about climate change, let's just look at what we're measuring for crying out loud.
Sure.
And so it's rather emphatic in the data. That's why we collect those data, so we can better understand the environment. And all the global measurements are... Now, there's disparity. Mm-hmm. We talk about that a lot, in fact. There's disparity in the strength of the signal. And we happen to live in Minnesota. Our own Minnesota backyards are one piece of landscape where this warming signal is extremely emphatic.
And it's strongest in winter, correct?
That's right. That's right.
Mark, I know you're involved next week, the third Minnesota Climate Adaptation Conference coming up next Thursday. Why is this important for Minnesota? Can you kind of give us a preview and some highlights of next week?
Well, since 2008, Paul, we've been working on a statewide climate adaptation partnership committee, and our purpose is to spread awareness and education about how our climate's changing and how we need to immediately adapt to this, because for preservation of our resources, our infrastructure, and other things, we need to really consider this seriously and do some adaptation. Now, we think with the greater Minnesota community, we can all gain better awareness and education if we share each other's experiences. So this annual meeting, annual conference we have, which is scheduled for January 28th next week, is to bring all these partners together, local units of government, state agencies, federal government, NGOs, etc., and share experiences related to transportation, energy, agriculture, public health, and a variety of things. We have a business panel, for example, next week where mm-hmm. we're bringing 3M, Best Buy, and General Mills to discuss how those major corporations are looking at climate adaptation and sustainability measures.
And I think that's an important point, because we're starting to see a trend here in Minnesota and nationally, aren't we, of corporate America really sort of coming on board and recognizing that climate change is part of their bottom line.
Absolutely. There's been much written about this. I know you've talked a lot about this on the air, Paul, but you're right. It's a nationwide, in fact, it's an international corporate movement that we have to pay attention to this.
And still time to register for folks that are
there's
interested?
Still,
how do they do that?
There's still plenty of time. If you Google Climate Adaptation Conference, it'll take you to the website. Still plenty of time to register. It's right here in North Minneapolis, and it's just a one-day conference. It's not multiple days.
Well, Mark Seeley and Pete Boulay, thanks so much for coming down to ClimateCast today. Appreciate your insight.
Thank you, Paul.
That's it for ClimateCast this week. I'm NPR News Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner. Carrie Miller is back next week, and I'll have a live report, hopefully with a less croaky voice, from the 3rd Minnesota Climate Adaptation Conference. Thanks for listening, and enjoy what looks like a classic Minnesota winter weekend ahead.